Hello, welcome to Risking Failure. This particular episode on vulnerability has been split into two parts. The truth be told, we found it challenging and we searched a lot, and I personally felt like I took some epic risks, and I'm a bit mortified that this is even going to air. However, be patient with us as you go on the journey of us exploring what it takes to be vulnerable and how we actually implement that a lot into our lives. We have two parts, part one and part two. Please hold on. Part two is better than part one. It's like all great trilogies. And hopefully after this, Mel will join us again. All right. And now off to the show. Hello and welcome to Risking Failure, the place where we have honest conversations about growth. I am with my two good friends because we've asked for Mel to come back thanks to popular demand. We've been inundated by two texts that have asked Mel to come back. And if you haven't listened to Risking Failure before, it is essentially just a couple of friends having honest conversations about what's going on in life so that the rest of the world could see normality in a way. And the person I've got with us today is Mel, but her name's actually Mary Louise. We call her ML for short, Mel.
Well, that's quite an introduction. Hello, Mark. How are you going?
Good. That was an introduction.
Oh, yeah.
And Mick is on the other side of the world, mate. How are you?
Mate, I am brilliant. And thanks to Mel and your mom for those two texts. That was really
You are welcome.
Yeah, that was great, actually. So, for those people that are regular listeners, they'll remember when Mel came on last time and we talked about openness, something similar to that. We just talked about it for the last 20 minutes.
I've just gone blank. Give me a second.
Mick?
Yeah, I don't know.
How can we not know when had her?
Last time we were talking, we kind of left on with the topic of vulnerability. And like the last quarter of it, we really kind of shifted focus and began talking about that, which was rather interesting.
And it's through me because Mel knows me differently than the rest of the world. So I was like, she was saying stuff. I was like, Mel, we are on air. Do not say
sorry
that.
About that. I did think about that afterwards. Sorry.
Nah, it's all right. That's all right. We talked
That's
about it.
What it's all about, I guess, right?
Yeah, we talked about it off air and we're all clear.
I realized after we had that episode, Mel, I had no idea who you are.
Yeah, I know, right? It's nice to meet you.
I realized as I got off, I was like, well, Dovo texted something that I didn't realize it was ML. I was like, well, ML must stand for something. So, therefore, I actually don't know who I just spoke to because I thought you were M-E-L.
Wow, maybe we should be Facebook friends or something.
I know.
Step up the relationship.
Yeah, that could be appropriate. So.
Okay, all right.
So, it is interesting because we had a pretty honest conversation that day and you didn't know Mel and Mel sort of knew you through me, but I know you guys both really well, but it's kind of fun like that. But it meant that we were having deep conversations about, I don't know.
Something that we can't remember.
Yeah, which went really well. But
good.
What we did want to continue was that topic of vulnerability. And I think, Mick, you might have put me onto Brené Brown stuff. She's done quite a bit of stuff on it. If you check out her TED Talks, if you haven't seen them, people, Brené Brown, B-R-E-N-E.
That's
how she spells it, right? Brown.
Yeah.
And she's got two TED Talks. Try to watch them in order because the first one went epic and the second one responds to what it was like to have something that go that big. And then I listened to her book, The Power of Vulnerability, which is really a presentation that they call an audio book, and it's incredible. And I started to wonder if I was vulnerable or not. Allow myself to be vulnerable. And Mel pointed out quite clearly that I had no capacity to be vulnerable whatsoever. So then I went to a guru counselor because I love going to all sorts of different mentors for everything. And she gave me some really interesting feedback and said, yeah, anytime I'm vulnerable, it's really coming from a position of strength because I'm a position of a teacher as an educator. So you're not, even though you're telling something personal about your life, you're not actually putting yourself in a position of vulnerability because you're using it as a model to guide other people. It's not the same as actually being truly vulnerable.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Is that what you meant?
Well, yeah, sort of. I mean, yeah, that's what I was saying. I just think that vulnerability part of us is harder to access.
You and I?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you and I specifically, but I'm sure for everybody else as well. I didn't articulate it like that. I just think it's harder to access sometimes. Especially when, I think if you're a leader, maybe.
Well, you got to pick who you're going to be.
Yeah, but you're used to being the leader and you're used to being in control and you're used to having people kind of following you. So the vulnerability thing is, I think it's a bit of a tricky one.
You're right about that leadership thing. I think that sometimes you're looking to go, well,
who is it safe with? And, you know, in an organisation, the senior, most senior person, the rule is you can't bitch down. So if you're upset about something, you're not happy, you never tell your subordinates because you need to go across or up. And I think vulnerability, a little bit like that, is that there's some stuff that you could tell your kids about as an example, but there's some stuff that's just not really appropriate. They're not really ready to know, or it doesn't seem like a healthy investment or level of vulnerability where sometimes I wonder sometimes if that those people haven't been available or around in my network, so therefore you just don't develop that capacity. I don't know. Well, it's not that it's not there. It's just a matter of how often you access it or something. We should talk about this. So I don't know.
A little bit with what you're saying, though, I feel like is I don't quite know how to define the difference, but it's not actually what I think of when I think of this topic of vulnerability that, for instance, Brené Brown was exploring. I've been identifying with it recently as something that when you, as she explains it, like when you get that warm wash of fear that says, oh my God, you can't do this, or who are you to think you can do this? I guess with like relationship stuff, when you've got a problem at work or whatever, I don't know that like it's necessarily that as much as it is like figuring out who to go talk to, so much as just the action of talking to someone about maybe a problem you've been holding on to for a long time, or taking action to step up and present at a conference that you've never done before. Like it's that moment of doing that, that if that is what instills a fear, I think that is what I feel like I've been identifying more with and trying to like in a weird kind of way, try to push into that more and experience that more often.
The fear.
Yeah.
I feel like this vulnerability thing is about being seen.
Yes.
Like it's about you can see me. And on a really simple level, it's like I joked off air that we should do all to make this sure this podcast was congruent, we should all do it naked. And, you know, it was a silly comment. It didn't go down very well with my friends. But the point was that, you know, that's a really good example. When everybody's dressed and you're naked, you feel very, very vulnerable. But I think that the way that plays out is in day-to-day is everybody is thinking one way and you go, well, I actually think like this, or I actually feel like this. And when you say that, there's an opportunity for you to be hurt or judged or there's a period of time, almost like a delay, where you don't know what's going to happen next. So that warm wash that Brené Brown talks about, I think it's relevant to maybe taking a professional. I don't know. I don't know if I'd always say I feel a warm wash of fear. I feel like it's fear. I don't know if I feel a warm wash at all.
Maybe the warm wash comes afterwards.
Mm.
Probably depends on what you're talking about in a big way, because somebody listening might have that warm wash of fear when they speak in front of a group, whereas clearly you don't. You get energized by that at some level, or that's pretty normal for you. But you may feel a wash of fear in a completely different scenario, like being in a room full of really smart people.
Yeah, what's funny,
I actually saw that coming. And it's true that you asked me what's that like, because I know that maybe you guys have never been invited to a room like that. But
do you know what I mean? Like if you were to go into a room full of like academics that are like really developed on a particular thing, and like sometimes you can feel lost in that room. And maybe that's not it either. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting discussion, isn't it? And I interrupted you a little there, Mel. I'm sorry about that, but
What were you going to say?
I'll forgive you.
Do you remember?
Yeah, I was thinking for me, it's really about exposing a part of yourself and being unsure how it's going to be received. Mm. So kind of being like, this is who I am. I'm putting it out there and people have the opportunity to embrace it or to reject it. And I think the vulnerability comes in saying it regardless of what the outcome is, regardless of whether people are on board with what you've said or what you've expressed.
To say I'm going to be me at all costs, and if I get hurt for this, I accept that.
Mick, yeah.
One of the challenges we're going to have with having other people join us, Mick, is when they're smarter than us, this is not going to go down well each week.
Okay.
I was like, is the Scott line gone down? Is this thing on? No, I reckon that is a sensational Yeah, that's exactly it. It's because I know there's been times when, I don't want to say too much about my life, actually, to be honest.
There you go.
Well, I know, because it's vulnerable. Well, and it's like, well, it's true.
I rest my case.
I think about things that I'm like, well, the difference is that private or is that appropriate?
And the other thing that I'll say to that is the capacity to be vulnerable, I wonder what its relationship is to feeling safe. And, you know, if you're talking to your friends, you might feel a level of safety, so you're more likely to be vulnerable. But in this situation, we don't really know who we're talking to, so it's a bit more.
Yeah, because I would happily talk to you two about, say, Mel, the rash that you've got. but I would happily talk about some things going on in relationships I've gone on. But you're right. I don't know who's listening, and I go, I don't know that they need to. I don't know that I want them to know. But I can, as a simple example, though, one of the things I've noticed is that if I say something, whether it be not so much an audience, that's different. We should put that sort of aside. But if in a personal relationship, say, well, with a friend, a loved one, relationship, and I say something, and there's a period of silence before they respond. And Mel's just made a face here as in, oh, my God, that's so true. That period of silence before they respond is what I would call terrifying often for me. But really I'm realizing that that's a period of vulnerability because you're like, hang on, don't leave me hanging here. Give me back. Is what I said okay? Do you accept that? And one of the things that I've noticed that I think is probably a really powerful thing for everybody listening to this, well, it's big for me, so I think it's going to happen to other people. I started to realize that at those times, I could get quite angry if my need wasn't met. In actual fact, I started to realize that anger was my response to feeling vulnerable. And I started to explore that and I started to note that many people have an emotional response to feeling vulnerable. So some people might get sad and teary. Some people will throw a tantrum. Some people will become a recluse and just pull away. Some people might get depressed. And I don't know what everyone's is, but I think that at the time when there's that silence, when you've exposed yourself, you feel emotionally naked, there's a period of time of when you haven't got the feedback to say, I love that of you, or that's beautiful, or that means a lot to me, or I support you. In that waiting period, that's where I started to realize, that's called vulnerability. I didn't know. I probably didn't know that or something. Yeah. I love that you just exaggerated the silence there. Just to really stay home the
point. I was just thinking about what you said.
Thanks for helping me out, guys.
I just forgot what I was going to say as well.
It made sense to me what you were talking about. I feel like what, in some ways, when I listen to what you're explaining, it sounds a little bit like moments of like an issue, perhaps. And there's that part of it. And there's, for me, also this ongoing thing that I think everybody experiences. And for me, the identification of that has been something to do with a feeling of anxiety, either an anxiety over something that I'm really worried about how it's going to play out. And it's a recognition for me that the stakes are high. Like I'm vulnerable. Like I'm out there.
But you could get hurt. That's what we were talking about. Vulnerable. Are we saying that you could get hurt?
Yes. At some level, whether it's, yeah.
Whether it be professionally, personally, financially.
All of those things. Correct.
That you could get hurt. Yeah. You could take a hit.
Because Mick, is what you're saying, if the outcome is dependent on you and you're worried about that outcome, are you suggesting that that you'll be seen in a negative light, or it'll reflect badly on you if it doesn't go the way that you want it to?
Yeah, it's a combination of that, Mel, and another element of I'm pushing beyond what I perceive to be my own capabilities. Like I'm pushing into something I've never done before.
And you're not sure if you have the capacity to do that?
Exactly. So that's like, those are usually the two biggest areas of anxiety that I'll feel. It's like, I've got the ball, I'm supposed to run with it, and it's not working out the way I want it to, or if it is, and now I'm really worried that it's not going to stay that way, just like that. And then the other one is like, I'm pushing into an area that I've never gone before. I'm in uncharted territory, and it's a little bit uncomfortable. And it's easy most of the time with those things to just retreat back and just say, so an example for me recently was like the podcast that I've started. It's been a positive experience overall, but week on week, it's still been like, I've been more than aware of hitting the send button, the button that makes it go live. You know, like,
but why is that?
Because it's a feeling of vulnerability, but it's a healthy one. So this is what I feel like I've learned the most out of Brené Brown's work, is like, I'm seeing that as a really good thing, and I'm just working through that because I understand that that's what the feeling is, and that's okay because that's how it's supposed to feel. Whereas I think a lot of the time in the past, I felt like it doesn't feel like that for whatever, the person that's lining up for the goal at the end of the grand final because he's been playing football for 15 years and he's been kicked 100 goals in the season. He's crapping his pants just as much as I might be in my junior football league when I get a free kick at quarter time. Like, there's really no difference. It's just the same level of risk and vulnerability.
So there's a subtext in that if I make a mistake or if this doesn't go how I want it to, that I'll be seen in a bad way, or my character won't show up how I want it to, or...
Well, you can get hurt. It's just some level of... Depends what the hurt is, like... Financial, it's not always going to be character or reputation. It could be, but it could also be an epic change of life, like in physical injury. And there's an adrenaline rush on that, where some people that jump off a cliff or whatever, and it's a calculated risk, but there's always a level of vulnerability.
I think it was interesting what you were saying before, Mark, that your response has been anger in the past, that we try and protect that vulnerability. Like, we don't want anyone to see it. So we use the strategy of being angry, for example, and that keeps people away because they go, oh, I don't want to make him angry. I don't want to upset him. And so you sort of, in a way, protect your vulnerability. I know in a lot of the work that I've done with people that I see when they become defensive or when they become argumentative about something, that's the time when I push them because I know that I've hit a nerve and I know that there's something underneath that that needs to be exposed because there's something that they're – embarrassed isn't the right word, but they don't want people to see.
Well, they don't want to have to admit, and it's the actual issue that would change the whole thing.
That's right. And it's usually a part of themselves that they're not accepting, that they're sort of fighting.
So that doesn't sound like the same as what I'm meaning. So when you talk about that, I don't know if that applies to me specifically or not. If it does, I haven't recognized that link yet. The link I've also noticed, not that I'm trying to protect, it's more so an emotional response is, I'm hurt, I'm struggling. It's like an animal. You go to help an animal and they've got an injured leg and then they freak out because they go, don't, careful. Like, there's a, you know, the responsibility is in your hands right now. Do not try to, don't hurt me. So it feels like, or it's like a, why would you let me get this hurt? Or why would you put me in this position?
I feel like you're still also talking about sort of like an injury, like an event, something being like when you've been hurt. Do you still
feel this?
Like, what about like just like day-to-day stuff when you're, do you ever feel like there's those times when you're working on a project or doing something, say when you've been talking about your podcast or other things that you're working on that just feel kind of ballsy and like pretty out there, that feeling, as Seth Godin says, he defines it as like, this might not work and that's okay, but I'm going to give it a really good shot anyway.
I like that ballsy thing. But I think before we got on air, we all talked about how we had different angles that were particularly relevant to us right now. And or where we, you know, you were saying how with a podcast, that's an area where you, when you step forward into that, you feel vulnerable. And when I step forward into doing a podcast or a blog, I feel vulnerable, but it's not epic. I'm fairly comfortable in that environment. Not, and that part of that means that, well, hang on, Mark, maybe take massive risks, take bigger risks. And I think in some areas I am. But for me, it's probably a bit more pertinent right now for just I'm observing my relationship capacity, not because it's broken or it's dysfunctional. It's just that that's where I'm really passionate about the level of growth that's available there. And I'm going, well, what can I do to allow this more? And then, Mel, you had a totally different angle on it.
The first thing that I thought of when we were brought up that we were going to talk about this topic is our own idea about what vulnerability means. And I feel like that's kind of what's showing up here. Mick's got one idea about it and you've got another idea. Neither's right or wrong. Just about working out what it is for yourself, where your areas of vulnerability are for yourself. I mean, yeah, for me it's been more specific, sort of like I guess a bit more like what Mark's talking about. I've been sick for the last 6 months and a big vulnerability for me has been accepting help from people. That's been really challenging because I'm quite an independent person and used to doing things for myself, and I found myself in a situation now where I can't. So the vulnerability for me has really been saying to people, I'm not okay and I need your help, because it's not really how I see myself and how I've kind of functioned in my life until now. So,
and that's because when you say I'm not doing okay and I need your help, they could actually say, oh, I don't want to help.
That, but also it's you're going to not see me at my best, and are you going to be okay with that? You know, you're going to see the side of me where I can't be, you know, that happy, bubbly person that everybody knows.
Isn't it interesting how we feel like we have a responsibility to people to be happy and bubbly, and we think that they're only going to love us at our best?
Yes. Yeah, it is.
That's
because
it, right?
We don't like the part of ourselves when we're not doing good. So why would somebody else? That's the thinking anyway. That's not the truth, but that's the thought process behind it.
Yeah, Brené Brown, when she talked about her research and findings, seemed to do a good job of defining vulnerability for males and females and how that was a little bit different, and how for women it was, I'm not going to probably say it all right, I'm sure you guys will be able to correct me, but doing it like perfectly and, you know, sort of pleasing everybody and making it look effortless and being beautiful while you're doing it. And for men, it seemed to be a little bit more about being strong and not appearing like you can't handle. I mean, it's sort of said in the same way, but I always think of that story she was telling about the guy that came up to her after she'd done a book launch discussion and said, well, you know, you don't do any research on men. And she said, I don't do men. And he said, well, that's real convenient. And, you know, my wife and girls over there would rather see me die than fall off my white horse, like, and just stormed away. And I think that that's always what stuck with me on the men's side of things, like this front of like just being the strength. That it's not very socially acceptable to be emotionally weak. whereas I think that's probably a little more accepted in a female capacity maybe, but I think the responsibilities we take on to fulfill those identities is really strong.
Yeah, that's interesting about the difference between men and women. I think I'd have to definitely agree with you on that, Mick. I think that the roles that we're in really determine where the vulnerability lies for us.
If we go back a step, so what we're basically saying is we're all looking at this vulnerability thing from three different angles. Mel's personal experience at the moment is the health thing and how you sort of need people for different things you didn't think you needed them for before. Mick, it's the vulnerability of stepping into a space where it's about what will people think when I show that I'm trying to do something that is a bit different for me. And for me, it's really specifically relationship driven in all levels of relationships. Like, can I be seen in a relationship and does that help? And all of us, basically, the consistency is, oh my God, I could get, people could not like me or I could get rejected here.
Yeah.
Now, there was a time we had a conversation, you know, when after I'd gone and seen that counselor,
So even that, as a bloke, I went and saw a counsellor and I'm talking about it. And I know that, and I even know it's my instinct to say, hey, just so you know, that wasn't weakness, you know. And actually, I personally think I go, it's, I just know it's growth. I know that's my drive, but I also know that that would be seen. It, you know, I know that that's the way, it's, and that's the risk, right? But then you said, I was talking to you about, you know, she said, oh, so this woman told me that I wasn't vulnerable. What the fuck? I told her. It's like, I'll show you, vulnerable lady. But it was pretty enlightening, but it was difficult for her to show me. It was very difficult for her to put it so I could see the link. But you could see it afterwards. She goes, yeah, you were like, yeah. And then you would say, yeah, you're more vulnerable now. I'm like, what? And I didn't even, I still can't even, I don't even know where it was when I did it.
Right.
When I was vulnerable.
I don't remember this conversation.
That was a pretty friggin' profound conversation for me. So you know what? If you could just maybe make an effort. If we can pause this for a second, Mick, I'll just, we just got some off-air issues here.
Like, I understand what you're saying, but I just can't remember the specific example
that's
explain
cool.
to you.
That's cool. All right. I'm done.
But
so tune in next week.
But what are you talking about you've been more vulnerable now?
Well, no, you said I told you about that conversation or something and you're like, yeah, you're more vulnerable now because you're, I was admitting an emotion. I think that's what it was. I was going, yeah, I actually feel like this and this and this. And you're going, yeah, of course. Like you're the last one to admit it or you're the last one to acknowledge it. Because I was too scared to say admit it. And then I guess... But I wasn't always too scared. I didn't recognize that was the emotion.
And that's what I was saying earlier. It's like being vulnerable means different things for different people. And I don't think that, like, I think it takes us a while to work out what it means for us to be vulnerable because we think that we are being vulnerable. But then when we actually do it and we feel that discomfort, we're like, I don't know, it just feels different. Because I think I've definitely been guilty in the past of feeling like I was being honest and being vulnerable, but it was really surface stuff. It wasn't legitimately what I was scared about people seeing about, you know, or noticing about me.
But see, this is weird because I've been in conversations like we all have and we've either been the person or we've seen someone else do it where you sort of make an effort to be vulnerable so they can see you, but it's actually not... really vulnerability. It's not actually because you're being so open. There's a difference between being open and being vulnerable.
Yes, exactly.
Like it's like here, I'll show you the drawers in my room or I'll show you the boot of my car or something, which most people don't see. You know, there's like open here, I'll show you that. But then there's also vulnerable, which is different.
Well, being
way different.
Being open is maybe like, let me tell you a story about something that's happened to me in the past. Being vulnerable is this is how I felt about it, or this is how it made me feel about myself, or this is, you know, I think, yeah, I definitely think there's something in the difference between being open and being vulnerable.
Yeah, because I did say that I'm open but not vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mel's just nodding.
Well, I am as well. Yeah, I'm not throwing stones.
So for listeners, I always do get aware that people are listening because when a conversation like this, like we're really searching it through, I'm not sure if the people on the outside go, God, this conversation's a mess because they don't really know. But the truth is we don't. I don't. I'd like to know that distinction between openness and vulnerable. So vulnerable means you get hurt. Open means you're showing someone you can't really get hurt, not at a massive level. It's indifferent. It doesn't feel like there's any risk. There's no fear precedes it or something.
I think in some ways, vulnerability is tied to, at some level, when you feel your own identity is on the line, even though it may not be, but you're literally tying your self-worth or your identity at some point to that action or event.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that.
And because of that, you may not like me.
Yeah.
But see, this is where
some iteration of that. Yeah.
This is where identity is so important. It's one of the primary things I work with when I'm working with whoever I work with, you know, whatever. Like, but it's a primary thing because you want an identity that liberates you. So if you are, say, a designer, well, no, actually, a good one example. I spoke to a woman the other day just by chance, and she's a health practitioner. And I said to her, and she was just a bit burnt out. And I said, I bet you're not really allowed to go out and have a drink with your friends. Because you're a health practitioner, you can't really. And her idealist naturopath health practitioner, she had an identity that didn't really allow her to do certain things. And I definitely had that when I was young. I was like this, always trying to be this model citizen. So I would never, there's so many things I just wouldn't do. And that's where, but if you've got an identity that says, You know, like that movie, Lebowski, the whatever that, you know, the guy's just a bum in the film. I couldn't stand the film. But when you got, if you're just seen as a bum, then you're allowed to wear whatever you want, say whatever you want, present however, drink however, and because you've got a bum, because you've got a bum, because you've got an identity that liberates certain behaviors. And this is where, if you've got an identity that liberates certain behaviors, it actually, does it reduce vulnerability a bit? I don't know. Maybe I took that somewhere too complicated.
Potentially, but.
Yeah, you lost me.
A little bit. You were the one saying that, you guys were saying that, that you, fundamentally your identity or your identity is at risk. Who you are is at risk. So.
Well, I think the way, if I had to summarize what I feel like I've been learning from people like Brené Brown, it's that there's something to do with the individual and their identity in that task or moment. And maybe when you're what she perceived as being like the wholehearted, that perhaps that the wholehearted were, in her research, seeing that their identity was being shaped in that moment, whereas the people who were genuinely trying to avoid vulnerability and fearful of it were feeling like their identity was at risk and on, like, literally they were, their entire existence was at risk in this moment. And she said it was just this subtle difference that the wholehearted understood that these are the moments that define me and I need to push through it because this is how I shape my story. That's been my big takeaway from a lot of her work and what I've read and understood. Because it wasn't so much in the moments as much as like her continually coming back to the fact that what she branded in her work as the wholehearted, meaning the people that have like, they haven't actually gotten, they haven't mastered vulnerability in any way. They move through it in a different way. They still experience it. It still gives them the same level of fear. They just move through it differently. And they've understood that this is what helps shape me. And that's a big enough difference to have a obviously big impact on life.
That's big.
Yeah, that is really big.
I don't have my dog here to shake his...
High five.
Mom.
Now, usually when something big happens, I say something big and then you go and bloody make a cup of tea. Mick, that's you know, before we got on air, you were saying, oh, I haven't really thought this stuff through too well and stuff. And you and Mel are just coming out with these blinders. I'm just walking through this conversation blind. That's epic because I feel like I can use that as a decision-making platform of sorts. Like when you said that about the whole, like, I see this as shaping me. I could see there's some decisions in my life right now where I'm like, whoa, if I looked at that as if this would shape my future, I probably would be a little bit braver than just seeing the risk that I could get seriously burnt. You are truly wise. Mel?
I'm just thinking about the difference between people that allow themselves to be in that situation and people that don't. People that say, I'm going to allow myself to be vulnerable, and people that really resist it, and what the difference is and what the different factors are with those people.
What do you think the difference is?
I don't know, because I feel like a lot of people avoid being vulnerable. I feel like, and that's a massive generalization, but definitely for me, I've avoided it a lot of my life because it's just such an uncomfortable feeling. And there's no guarantee at the end of it that the outcome's going to be okay. It's kind of, it's a massive risk. So I don't really know what the difference is, but what I know for myself is that I've been able to recognize times when vulnerability's popped up, and I have made a decision to not fight it, just to let it show up and sort of see what happens, which is sort of what Mick's talking about, but it's probably a few steps back from it. Because I would say that before this year, I didn't even really know how to be vulnerable.
Mm.
Like, I may have stumbled across it accidentally, but I didn't really know what it meant for me.
Mm.
So.
Mm.
I have a short blog post that I had saved of Seth Godin's. I may have read it on the show before. It's fairly short, but it's about fear. And it's called Fear the Fear, Feel the Fear. So he's saying most of the things we avoid are avoided because we're afraid of being afraid. Sorry, but it's true. The negative outcomes that could actually occur due to speaking up in class, caring about our work product, interacting with the boss, there's not a lot of measurable risk, but the fear can be debilitating, or at least, at the very least, distasteful. It's easier to just avoid it altogether. On the other hand, artists and leaders seek out that feeling. They push themselves to the edge, to the place where the fear lives. By feeling it, by exposing themselves to the resistance, they become more alive and do work that they're most proud of. The fear doesn't care either way. The choice is to spend our time avoiding that fear or embracing it.
Mm.
That kind of defines a lot of what we're talking about for me, is like learning to just simply define perhaps fear and what it means when we're experiencing that. And I would have to say that maybe not all the time that I have fear, I necessarily have vulnerability, but I'm trying to learn that when I do have vulnerability related to things like fear and anxiety, that I'm trying to be aware of when those are things that are growth opportunities or growth things that are healthy.
Geez, that's interesting, because I'm thinking through some decisions I've got available to me at the moment, and I'm not really going to do them. But then I'm like, oh, if I ask it like that, as in, what am I actually scared of? Sometimes I'm trying to make a good decision, a right decision. But when you say, well, is it a fear that's making you do that? You're like, oh, maybe, you know, like the whole right decision can disguise the fact that you're not stepping into fear. Man, this is all stretching my brain big time.
Yeah.
Is that stretching your brain? Or
yeah, that's why there's a bit of silence for me, because I'm like, whoa.
I don't think we get this. We shouldn't put this to air.
I don't get this at all. But this is what I mean. I think it's really complicated. I don't think anybody really gets it. I mean, not nobody, but like, I think it's a really challenging subject. Because why would you ever, like, it's challenging all the way around.
Like, I want to live a brave life, but I often don't recognize where I need to be taking
that's
the risk.
Right. That's what I mean.
And so when I said, I noticed myself get angry, I'm like, oh, if I'm getting angry, I need to go, that might be an area where I need to take a risk or wait or be vulnerable. So it's giving me a little signal. Now, sometimes I'm angry because I'm like, well, no, there's a purpose to the anger. And I find the definition of anger is it's extreme into frustration where you've got no other way to either communicate or get the outcome or, but you know, if we go, I want to live a brave life, which is the almost, and she says courageous, like, because the courageous person is open hearted and like, you know, see me. If I want to do that, but okay, when do you live in a brave life? When do you just live in a dumb life?
I think you just kind of
let it shape you, I guess.
No, jeez. I sort of feel like maybe part of this guidance is how much you're experiencing that fear and anxiety about putting yourself on the edge. If you're not feeling like you're pushing yourself and living out on that edge, then you're probably not living what you would consider to be your brave life, right?
And maybe another question to ask is, how prepared are you for people to see the parts of yourself that you don't like?
See, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I feel like I'm a lot more concerned about people thinking that I don't know what I'm doing, or I'm fumbling through something, or don't have a clear plan. Maybe this is that whole masculine approach to things, that you're supposed to be strong and defined and have a clear path and decision on. So sometimes the fear for me is that somebody would say, why are you doing that? That doesn't make sense. Like, that was a dumb thing to do, a dumb strategy for whatever your business or your, the way you built that shed on the side of your house is just like, why'd you do it that way? Like, that to me is the fear of like when somebody comes up and show, like, sees my work. It's like that, just like you're talking about, Dobbo, is that moment of silence where you're waiting for them and you're hearing that silence and they're going to say, why'd you do it that way? And you, there's this feeling of this need to jump in and defend. Like, those moments for me on trying to really like look and like pay high attention to what's going on in that moment, to be fully aware of like how I'm reacting to that and how that feels and why it's in, why I think it's so important to jump in and see if I can like somehow just harness that moment to just like figure out a way to like move slowly through it and just not compulsively jump in to substantiate why I did it this way and that way. And, you know, it just had to be done this way because of this and this and that and these other circumstances, to just not even have to worry about explaining myself and just like, that's how it got done. That's not easy for me to do.
Mm.
So is the subtext of that then that you're worried about if people think that you're competent enough or that you can make the right decisions? Or I know I'm simplifying a little bit, but is that sort of what the subtext of it is?
Mm. Yeah, that's, I'd say there's a consistency in stuff like that with competency. I think that's a pretty common masculine thing too, kind of coming back to the same themes. Now, in some ways, I imagine that in relationships too, Dobbo. It's like that, that's the wrestle with a relationship is like that. I don't think anybody takes on like a masculine role, meaning in their brain, they're like, oh, I'm the man, I've got to be like this. But there's just, there's, it's very hard to remove yourself from sometimes being in the role where you feel like you're supposed to have the answer or supposed to be decisive or strong or whatever it's.
Or to know. For me, like in relationships, I feel as a bloke, it's a responsibility. I'm meant to know that I'm into this person and I at a certain level, so I'm not messing with their heart or situation or life. I'm like, I don't bloody know. You're like, I'm stepping into uncertainty. But I feel like as a bloke, you're meant to have, you're taking on the responsibility to say, I do know. I, you know, like that's what I feel. I'm not sure it's, I can see that not working. I can, as I'm hearing this, I'm like, this, that doesn't functionally work. But Mel, if someone's going to go on a date with you and they said, yeah, you seem all right, I don't really know. I don't know, but let's hang out a bit.
Well, the other side of that is for a female, I think you always, well, you don't always hear, but you hear people saying, oh, she's so emotional, you know, she's so emotional. And we are as females, but that has such a negative context to it now that it's almost, for me as a female, it's difficult to express how you feel because you're going to be kind of branded with being so emotional and, you know. But that's just sort of a part of who we are, in the same way it's a part of who a man is to, you know,
have a level of certainty,
and all that. So as a female, I think the vulnerability is in expressing how you feel, regardless of how you think it's going to be interpreted.
I would have always thought it was quite the opposite, you know, that it seems like women are always so much better at sharing their feelings, but what I seem to be hearing in a lot of this stuff, not just from you, Mel, but just in general from reading Brené Brown and listening to so much more conversation around this issue, is that that's not really necessarily the case. That there's maybe conversation up to a point, or not the ability to really say what you feel because you're still trying to, I don't know.
Yeah, because I feel for me in relationships, sometimes I've been scared to say how I feel because I feel like I'll be rejected. Like, or if I sort of, you know, you don't want to be that needy girl. So, you know,
so you're literally talking in a relationship as opposed to like, human relationship.
Now we are.
Yeah. Well,
it's interesting about that need thing, because I think before when you were saying when you were sick and you're like, you don't want to be the person that calls her, I need A, B, and C. And need's not necessarily an attractive quality, but vulnerability is to go, this is important to me, or I'm at this position, can you help? It's interesting the difference between, like, I remember hearing, I don't remember who said it off the top of my head, but they said in relationships the most important three words you can ever say are not I love you, but please help me.
Oh, that would be so hard for me to say.
Right.
That would be, I could say I love you much easier than please help me.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, moral of the story, people. That's an action point there, just to play with that for a bit. Like, please help me. Because you can think about it, like, some people I know, if I said, please, can you please help me? They just look at me as, I know I'd get rejected. Loser.
Would you? Would you really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, like, that's not, you know, you can try it. I think it's important to take that risk and just accept it, like, see how you go. But I think the difference between requiring, asking for help and being vulnerable is different to going, being needy. Because some people, their neediness is fatiguing. And you can tell when you go, oh, this is, like, I've had a couple of conversations this week with people that has just been a bit flat. And you're like, I have no problem just chatting away because I'm like, yeah, you get flat. That's fine. It didn't feel like need at all. But see, this is what I mean. I think we confuse things. Like, I go, I'm angry, I'm hurt, but actually I'm vulnerable. And someone else goes, I'm needy. I go, no, you're actually, it's actually a state of vulnerability. See, this is what I mean. I think that we've got an emotion, which is where I started with this thing. I was like, I think this is what's going on. I don't know. We've got an emotion that disguises it so we don't recognize that that's actually a place of vulnerability. And I think control is another one where I go, I'm going to get this right. And I know in a relationship, the whole thing about, like, I feel like as a bloke, we need to know and be certain and we can't just see. And I've also noticed, like, the level of vulnerability in a relationship too is that when you commit, there's a certain level of vulnerability because your needs may not get met in that relationship. And you might have them dangled in front of you in another potential relationship and you go, no, but I'm committed here. There's a vulnerability in level of commitment. Like, there's a vulnerability in going and picking an ice cream and then someone, you know, when you order food and you get food envy because the person next to you ordered something better and when it arrives, you're like, damn. So, even some people can't make a decision. I think when they can't make the decision, I think they actually might feel vulnerable at that point. So, they don't make a decision because, like, oh my God, if I make the wrong decision, maybe I'll lose. Perhaps that's vulnerability. That's where I think we have a masking emotion.
Hey folks, that was part one of Vulnerability with Mick Dobbo and our ring in for this topic, ML. We hope you enjoyed it. Part two is going to be better. So if you didn't, just give us a chance. And we'll see you next week for part two. Bye.
You've been listening to Risking Failure. To join the community and access more free content, news and updates, subscribe at riskingfailure.com.